it's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
And good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. We've had a little difficulty here, technical difficulty in the internet streaming through the KWAI 1080 AM. But if you'd like to or still want to listen by internet, go to carolcox.com. That's CarolCox.com. Click on that link that says listen live to stream, and you're off and running to the races. Anyway, thank you for joining me, and got lots to talk about. We're going to chat, hopefully, about dairy. And and by the way, I did wish you a Happy New Year's, though it's a start. And I know many of you, like myself, had such a great year. You don't want to part from that. And but if you got a little confidence, this coming year will be better than the last year. You know why? Because you're still alive. So you start there, and that's all the makings of another good year. Anyway, a lot of things to share with you I'm working on and have been working on in last year. Sounds a long time ago, but I assure you it wasn't. I'm looking at something on Maui. Now, how many of you out there would, as taxpayers, would accept, once you learn that the government, the state government, is paying $1,000 plus per day to lease a piece of property to an individual trust? And then that land basically is used for absolutely nothing. And I mean, so we'll say $365,000 a year. I've spoken to the state offices that handle that matter, and I'm going to go in greater details, obviously, in the coming week or coming shows. But when I first heard it, I thought, no, I'm aware that what happens politically, there's many tricks that can be played. Guy shows up with a pocket full of money, a box full of money, as Pearl Bailey would say, a five-pound box of money, and give to the politician for his campaign. Well, you know, people just don't go around giving money for nothing. And if you got that much money to give, why don't you give it and distribute it to the hungry and the needy and whatever? But you wait for the appropriate time, so you give a campaign donation, or you fund some kind of activity. And so in return, how do you get paid? Well, historically, there are many schemes and many setups, so you'll need several factors or elements to carry this off. You first have to have something that that person has that you want his money, so he donates or she donates her money to your campaign. You, in turn, win. You then appoint an individual who oversees and becomes a gatekeeper. So the gatekeeper is then tasked with finding something of value that would, in fact, allow that individual to sell it or lease it to the state or rent it to the state. And in return, the state would pay some handsome amount of money. When you see, there's no real dictate as to how much this, a person can charge for the lands. It's a free market. So you can understand where this thing goes. And this is not to suggest that this is what transpired in this situation. But $1,000 a day, I'm informed by the officials at the state agency. And in turn, and it has been going on for many years. And as a result of the many years of us paying that money, $1,000 a day, what is being said, and I'm informed by the state agency head, is that we have initiated condemnation of the property. And again, going back to the, and why this is relevant, I want to share with you. Initially, I'm told that the reason they got into this lease and this agreement had something to do with the United States Coast Guard wanted to rent it, and I'm thinking, well, okay. if the Coast Guard wanted to rent it, then the Coast Guard is federal. What does that have to do with state money? And then they say, well, we're going to open up a fish market. Well, okay, we've heard those schemes before. And then thirdly, well, we were going to use it for the ferry. So those are just a few examples and explanations that were offered. So my question is, who initiated this lease? And so they offer this, they offer condemnation, by the way, which is not complete, to close the lease or kill the lease or do away with it to get out of that relationship. But to in order to get out of it, because legally there's a, and this is per the state agency's own words, is that in order to get out of the lease, we really, the benefit of condemning the land is to, then we can close the lease or cancel the lease. So imagine, you have that situation, and it's our tax dollars, and we're going to get to the bottom of it, and I don't want to talk to you sketchy-like, and I know my policy is not to talk about things without naming agencies, but purposely without, those are the facts, and just hold on to your seats, and I think this one does outdo everything. Just the mere fact that entities, the Abercrombie administration should have brought closure to this. And then even though it's in condemnation, the property is still being offered for sale by the individual. So we're going to really delve into this and in the coming weeks. I've asked for the number of files. And then there's other things on Maui that we're going to be bringing to your attention. And things like, you know, the former law enforcement head of DLNR, I attempted to get them to answer some allegations, and I've spoken about these online, on air, and the allegations were that the chief of law enforcement of DLNR, Randy Awohi, these are the allegations, and I had contacted the pilot, and his explanation was, well, you're no one official, but I will talk when there's a complaint file or if an official come to investigate me. And the allegations were that the helicopter service was used to fly into Maui up in the Kenai area that is normally used for drug pulling and eradication of marijuana, and use that plane, that chopper, to go up and collect hihivai and other fish and other marine environment animals or invertebrates or what have you for the Christmas party. That may sound familiar. We did one story on Molokai where state workers from Maui County took an electric shock device and that had been seized and was provided to them by the law enforcement division, and they in turn, these are forestry workers, went up and shocked the stream so that they too could have a party. So we're going to try to hit a little harder this year, and hopefully with this $1,000 bit a day being paid for lease or rent for a piece of property that is just a scratchy, gravelly pit. And we're going to try to get to those things. And hopefully, Governor Ige, we've seen he sent a shot across the bow to say that he wasn't going to give free days off during the holiday and saving the taxpayers' money. So we're going to hopefully, in that vein, feed him many of these stories, and hopefully that the Attorney General and the Ethics Commission, and they all suited up together, speaking in unison, that they will not tolerate crime, corruption, or just stupidity or greed. Either one of those really has a negative impact on you and I, the taxpayer, and we should be free from abuse. So anyway, we're going to talk about dairies and milk, or the white gold. And you know, we've talked about Kauai, the proposed dairy there, and I have invited Ms. Kathy Ogell, who heads the Animal Rights Hawaii, and we're going to be talking about it. It's a nonprofit organization that looks at humane treatment of animals and trapping. And there's a number of things that she and I will be discussing. And so please join in, and 524-1080 is the number. Call your friends and tell them they still can catch this on internet at carolcox.com. Good morning, Kathy. How are you? Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Carol, and thanks very much for the invitation and the opportunity to talk about this really very important issue.
Yeah, well, give a little bit about yourself and your organization, and I'm sure many people have seen some of your work or heard of some of your work, and just give us a little bit background, if you would.
Okay. Well, Animal Rights Hawaii was founded by a group of us back in 1977, long, long time ago, when we realized that not enough was being done to protect animals, and not just protect animals, but to advocate for them, to mm-hmm. give them a voice in our world, because they are citizens of our world, and even though they don't speak the same language we do and do not have the right to vote, we need to advocate on their behalf.
Mm-hmm.
So we began a long time ago, and we have dealt with such issues as the fur industry, rodeos, whaling, animals and entertainment, cetaceans in captivity.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely we have been monitoring the livestock industry here in Hawaii for the past, say, 30 years. And we feel that animals here do not enjoy the paradise
mm-hmm.
that people do.
Mm-hmm. And in the earlier days, for myself, and this is before me, being a hunter and growing up hunting and killing things, and as you get older, you begin to appreciate the value of life. And me, I've grown out of it where, and I look back as a person, advocating for the animals is okay. But the reason I've stopped all of it, hunting and all of that anything that, it was more for me because I start to hurt inside and got past the recreational or the claim that I was doing it to eat, to put food on the table when I passed 20 grocery stores and maybe 100 gardens, could have eaten vegetables and what have you. So the animal rights active advocating for that, and there are things, for example, cruelty in farming of animals and caging of animals and hunting and using snaring. And you're opposed to snaring, am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. We have tried to make snares illegal over the years at the legislature. Unfortunately, the environmental community has a lot of power, and they say it's the only way they can protect mm-hmm. some areas of the aina.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have found, and this is really quite interesting, is that over the past 30 years, there have been a number of studies about what is really causing the death of the forest, the death of our resources. Why is our water polluted? Why is our air polluted? And recently, a study was made public that says that our eating habits are really driving animals and environment to extinction,
mm-hmm.
much more than the type of car that we drive or the kind of computer we use or whatever kind of instruments we use.
Mm-hmm.
Just, in fact, this past week, there was a story on NPR. It was picked up by AP and published in the Star Advertiser a few days later, that this agriculture department is saying that that we need to look at the environmental implications of their industry, and obviously the meat business, the Meat Institute, is very much opposed to this. So just for example, the study says that compared with other popular animal proteins, beef produces more heat-trapping gases per calorie, puts out more water-polluting nitrogen, takes more water for irrigation, and uses more land than other forms of agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And the meat industry has gone so far as to exert their power over Congress, and Congress wants this study suppressed. Congress is telling the scientists not to talk about the environment because they realize that this is a really, really serious problem.
Mm-hmm.
And to that point, I would like to announce that Animal Rights Hawaii is sponsoring the showing of a film called Cowspiracy, The Sustainability Secret, at the state capitol on the 22nd of January, the day after session opens. The auditorium is in the basement, and this film was produced on the mainland, and it talks about how so many of the major environmental organizations have ignored the implications of the meat industry,
mm-hmm.
meat and dairy, on mm-hmm. the on our environment. So this is, we're inviting everyone at the legislature, the governor, the chair of the Board of Agriculture, and the public. It's free. There'll be two showings at 4 and at 7 p.m. You'll see flyers for it all around town, and we do urge everyone who would like to learn about this big picture, especially since we're talking about mega dairies on Kauai and what's going to happen to the dairy industry over on the Big Island. It is very much on point at
mm-hmm.
this moment.
Mm-hmm. You know, the discussion about agricultural impacts on the environment and the health of humans and the atmosphere and whatever, I look back at the involvement in the trust and the amount of leverage that power, authority, that the State Department of Agriculture has. I believe, based on the things that I've observed and read and documented and what have you, a great portion of the endangered species, or the conditions that were impacted, that drove them in, that contributed, I should say, not one factor drove them into extinction or near extinction, but agricultural imports, agricultural, the Kochi frog, how did it come in? Through plants, which is regulated by whom? The state ag. We have many other species, bugs, the coffee beetle, and all of those things. So it's critical that we take a serious look at the... I noticed the gentleman Enright was retained by Governor Ige. But one of the biggest contributors in the decline in species and habitat and the introduction of alien species can be found right there in the laps of the State Agriculture Department and the political structure of the Agricultural Commission. And anyone wish to debate that, I'll take you to task and bring out the documents and show you. So, but this dairy, now recently there's a dairy issue, debate, where there's a milk Protection Act or something that was lifted or suspended. Can you speak to that and how its relationship is to, as you might see it, to Kauai, to the Big Island, and some of the politics behind it, if you could?
Well, sure. 50 years ago, there were upwards of 60 dairies throughout the state of Hawaii, and all the milk that was consumed here was produced here. As the land became more valuable for other things, and it became easier to bring in healthy supplies of chilled or frozen things like ice cream, the dairies just couldn't make it, because everything has to be brought in here, including the feed for the animals. So one by one, the dairies disappeared. This is not, in my estimation, a problem for people who consume milk products. There are multiple deliveries by air and by ship daily from the mainland for people who want to consume those. We keep hearing about, well, if there's a strike, if there's a calamity, an environmental calamity, I honestly don't think that that's going to really impact people the way it's been threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to remember that although people may like their yogurt and their ice cream, that humans are the only animal that consumes the milk of another animal. It's really ridiculous. It is unnecessary for nutrition, and I'm not a nutritionist, but I've read an awful lot of reports, and it's not something that is necessary for human health. In fact, it has been, dairy has been attached to several diseases, such as, I believe, Crohn's disease, and, not being a doctor, I don't want to really get into that.
Well, you know, some people are lactose intolerant and what have you. But I was reading an article, a couple of articles, that talk about how New Zealand, for example, is now questioning the impacts, the environmental and social economic impacts on that milk and dairy farming. And then that got me to thinking. Someone had asked me, well, why are people raising their voices against the dairy proposed on Kauai? They have dairies and have had dairies for many years in the state of Hawaii. And we even have a few on Kauai and in Maui. And I chuckle and say, really? Do you know where you are? Are you forgotten where you are? Well, you're in Hawaii. So the last thing that we want to trust is give any validity. Just because something exists does not mean it did not have impacts, because keep in mind, in this state, the government does not sponsor a protection. The government does not advocate looking to prevent preventative measures. They think about the dollar, what drives it. If we're going to create 15 jobs, that's good enough for us. That's the mantra. But in reality, we really have engaged or assessed the real impacts or the negative impacts or the real positive ones that, other than put money in someone's pocket, that farming, dairy farming here in the state of Hawaii, we don't really know how great of an impact it had on coral reefs and the ocean and our shorelines and all of that. We really don't know, because we never really went to test it, did we not?
This is very true. When the state was being forced to build the slaughterhouse here on Oahu, there were promises made of so many jobs going to be created, and sustainability, that word was just bounced around. You could hear it in the corridors of the legislature. That has been a complete and utter failure. And this is money coming right out of the taxpayers' pocket. Mm-hmm. We are also paying for feed to come into the state for people who raise pigs, who raise sheep, who raise cattle. We're giving them, supplementing their cost by mm-hmm. giving them discounts on the foodstuffs and also absorbing the cost of the transport. So we're talking about an industry that is propped up by so many pieces of taxpayers' dollars that without it, it simply would not exist. And why it should not exist? Well, for one thing, 1,000 gallons of water are required to produce 1 gallon of milk. And this is a quote from the Environmental Protection Agency. It's not just from an animal rights person. This is what our government is saying. The meat and dairy industries combined use nearly 29% of all the fresh water in the world today. Mm-hmm. This is growing feed for crops for livestock consumes 56% of the water in the U.S. This is water that could be going to grow food to feed people. And it doesn't take that much water to grow vegetables and, mm-hmm. and wheat stuff.
Yeah.
So it's, and, okay, thinking about Kauai, Ulupono said they wanted to start with 2,000 cows. This is from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Office of Research and Development. A farm with 2,500 dairy cows produces the same amount of waste as a city of 411,000 people. And this is what is supposed to be Pono. This is what is going to be put into place above a hotel, above a scenic shoreline. It boggles the mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I am doing my overflight of that area. You have to, while looking through the camera and trying to get pictures to do the story, I'm sitting in midair and thinking, you know, how difficult of a situation is this that has been presented? Because in reality, we're seeing, and just this is what's going through my mind, I reflect, be overt about it, as I'm sitting there dangling in the air and trying to get a picture to show and convey the impact on the natural area. I'm also hearing, you know, we're also saying, well, it's impacting the hotels. But, you know, at one time we were opposing the golf courses. So the bigger thing that I took away from this is that, okay, we have a hotel which consumed a lot of the land and impacted the environment and the runoff and bringing people and concentrating them in their waste. They're generating waste like the cows are. But the question is, can we trust now the state and the federal government to make sure that if, in fact, a dairy is sited, we don't treat it like we treated the hotel industry in the old days, like Turtle Bay, and finally got what it wanted, basically, through wheeling and dealing. And so while sitting there, I'm thinking, well, gee, just yesterday we were arguing about hotels and their impacts and golf course and the runoff and the nitrogen and the depletion of and degrading of habitat. And now we're moving. So nothing really changes. And so speaking of that, you know, when we talk about plants, we really, what I'm learning, we really don't have an aggressive, confident agency here in the state to really stand up and look at these documents that are being submitted, these proposals. And understand, on Kauai, there's a gentleman named Ornelas, I think. And some reportedly, he was had a dairy or was involved in a dairy. And the reason he didn't go further with it was that there were environmental concerns. But now he's advocating for the placement of this new dairy. So
is that Gary Ornelas who sits on the Board of Agriculture?
I don't know if I think it may be. I don't want to misspeak, but he's on Kauai, and I was in talking about that subject, and it just brought me back to thinking, and what we all have to do, whether it's dairy, agricultural, single plants, like soy milk. It's we say it's healthy, and I've learned to enjoy it and drink it, but when you look at the overall impacts of even the hands-off ability and the loss of rainforest, the loss of forests and grassland areas to create farm to raise soybeans, because soy milk is the thing, right? Almonds and all. So I think, for example, with Animal Rights Hawaii and organizations like my EnviroWatch, we learn every day and we have to say to the government, you can't do it like you used to. And all of the hook and crookery that has taken place in the past is serving only to put us in a worse predicament environmentally and human health-wise and what have you. So speaking of that, with this lifting or suspending of the Milk Act, and what's going on, Bothello saying that he's going to have to sell his dairy, and there's a new dairy coming up on Kauai. Are these things actually connected? Do you suspect, or what's your opinion, that there's something, some conniving going on here? It just, for them to fall in place in the timing of it is just kind of strange. And when
It took place at a time between the holidays when everybody just really doesn't even know what day it is,
I did backflips when I thought, wait, this is serious. This is going to impact everybody. We're talking about the dinner table. We're talking about affordability of milk, and they had it during the holidays. Half of them were either drunk or eating cookies, just fattening themselves. You follow, and I just thought, wow, why didn't they hold it in after January, discuss this and postpone it?
Well,
do you suspect there's any? I mean, just in an opinion. You don't have to.
I've been dealing with these boards for many, many years, and I must say that there are people who are making decisions on these boards that impact their own personal businesses. There are two people on the board and at least two,
mm-hmm.
who are involved in the cattle industry. And I believe that when things like this are going to be possibly impacting their own business, that they should recuse themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if you're saying, do I have my suspicions? Yes, I do. Now, with regard to the situation on the Big Island, this has been going on for some time. Dean Foods, which is a mainland company, I think it's out of Idaho, large dairy company, has bought out
mm-hmm.
one of the two remaining dairies. And what they turned around and said was, well, the Milk Act is supposed to make sure that the farmers get a minimum amount at the milk parlor when they turn their milk in for processing. But Costco's bringing milk in, and they're selling it for less than we can if we pay the farmers this higher price. So.
Mm-hmm.
We want to lower that price. And the other dairy that belongs to Cloverleaf, which belongs to Botello, he was whinging a great deal about how he was going to go out of business. And then in these 2 days last week, the whole thing changed miraculously.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, Botello has been in some sort of meetings with Ulupono from mm-hmm. Kauai, and he's planning to sell his dairy to them, and When I attended these meetings, when things get really interesting, they go into executive session and we all have to go outside, and then they discuss the really salient stuff, and they don't share that with us.
Mm-hmm.
So, the only way we'll know is when they finally post the actions, and they post actions rather than minutes of their committee meetings, and they're not terribly informative.
Mm-hmm.
There's an assistant AG who attends all of these meetings, and she makes sure that nobody says anything that they shouldn't say in public. So that makes me really suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Well,
transparency is not their goal.
Yeah, speaking of that, and this is somewhat off subject but related, relevant. Speaking of the Attorney General and its way it handles, it should be there to give advice. But on many occasions, and I don't know if a lot of the listeners out there have the occasion to go and participate or observe these commission meetings. But if you've never been, the Attorney General is appointed by the governor, and you would think it is a law abiding group and enforcement group and all of that, but the shenanigans that are pulled, I don't think you should talk about that. And at the end of the day, the results is exactly what the developer or the person that was meaning to use state resources or people's resources for their betterment, not for the people's betterment, but for the company or an individual entity. I go away with the funny feeling that the Attorney General has found itself to serve as nothing more than a facilitator. And I believe the executive session that we witness is only to serve in defrauding the people. That whole process. And I hope that the new governor speaks to that or address that. And because you know when you go in to testify, you're not just testifying in opposition or expressing your concerns about a proposed project, and the individual that's proposing it is at odds with you. You find yourself at odds with the Attorney General, with the commissioners, who speak and say exactly what the Attorney General tells them. And the other problem is minutes of meetings are not timely. Transparency is a problem. So it suggests that there's corruption at the highest level in law enforcement and the legislative process. Hopefully that changes. I don't know if it will, if it can, but I'm nauseated when I go to these commission meetings and I hear, well, we're going to take an executive session, which is protocol, which is allowed, but sometimes, and then you see this backslapping, and I've witnessed where the developer, the person that's proposing the project, is welcome in and participate in the, quote, executive session. So you know, that just run off on another branch here, but that's something, and it's disheartening to see this and a so-called democratic process.
Yes, I remember the early times when I would attend these meetings, and I would feel so alone, although the public is supposedly invited to attend these meetings and to participate, But, you know, there's, as you say, there's backslapping and special handshakes and, oh, you know, how are the kids, you know, we'll see you at the barbecue. That, you know, it's
and that's true. I've heard, I wasn't at the same meeting you were at, but I've had the same things done.
But you have to develop a thick skin, and if you're going to speak up for what you believe in, and I know you certainly do, and I try to, you've got, it's a hurdle just to participate.
Yeah, I had to hold my tongue here, bite my tongue. I was about to say, and you also need a rabbit's foot, and you're the wrong person for me to say. but when you attend these meetings, you just have to be lucky. It's like going to Vegas to even get transparency, to even be treated in a fashion that you're viable. You're sitting there, and you sit, and the main issues or move to the rear of the agenda, and it's like, why even go through that gyration when, in fact, you've already made your decisions? These meetings are tailored to put a public face on crime, on corruption, and abuse of power and authority and favoritism. That's what these meetings, these so-called commission meetings are when you look at the makeup of them and the conflict. And it is just kind of scary. But speaking of that, there's another couple things we'll be talking about, but you have a campaign about the concerns about the DLNR, one of our favorite subjects, right?
Yes, I do. I do. I think that the people at DLNR have really gone over the line on their rat killing campaign.
Yes.
And I know there are not a lot of people who are rat supporters, nor am I against trying to save endangered animals, but most recently DLNR has engaged in a crowdfunding, I think that's what it's called, campaign to sell these really awful T-shirts with pictures of dead rats on them, and they have imported these very, very expensive rat traps, which are from New Zealand, which seems to be the home of all things that are evil for animals, and are suggesting that people adopt a killer rat trap so that you can have your name on one, and as it offs any number of rats, you will have that personal enjoyment of knowing that you have committed rodenticide, but for a good cause.
Right. Well, you're going to get this kind of behavior because just from the overlaying this from a human aspect, don't be shocked that nothing will change overnight, because when an honest person in government stands up and speaks out, you know what they call it? A rat. So when and what they do to, quote, rats in the human form is atrocious. So imagine, my concern is that the impacts of this and protecting the birds are really great, but here's a reflection. Let's say Carol Cox Developing Corporation wants to put up a condominium complex in this area that I own, and it's or an area I want to buy it or want to lease it in perpetuity forever, and I want to do that, build this area, but there are birds there, and more than likely I'm going to get what I want. I'm going to be able to build my condo. But when it comes to, they say these actions are necessary to protect the birds, so that same person can go and the government will take and say, well, we got to kill the rats. We got to do all of these things. But on the other hand, the greatest killer of resources or natural resources, birds and flowers and plants in the state of Hawaii, is people and their ways. And I say that with great surety, in that we're even responsible for the rats, for bringing them here. Would you agree?
I would. And we can open up another lengthy conversation on the use of pesticides mm-hmm. in the forests and mm-hmm. poisons which DLNR is using in the forest, and we'll not just be killing their target mm-hmm. species.
Controlling predators is a major concern and a tool of protecting the endangered species. But there, I believe in the broadcasting of poisons and what have you. If you insist on doing that, then become as aggressive as well with the military, and insisting that their shipments are inspected, and that their protocol, and that these dogs, and you and I know about the sniffing dogs and what have you, they can only run for so many days, and you have so many dogs, so you're limited already. The program is limited. But these are extreme measures, and they speak to the failure of the so-called measures that are in place at the border, at the airport, at the docks, to inspect and ferret out these rats and other things. And then let's look at how this state presents itself and treats the importation of ornamentals or horticulture or plants or what have you. Very loose, if you ask me, because when I arrived here, as you know, way back, snakes and spiders and scorpions, you could buy them in the pet stores, you see. And the state agriculture sat on its thumbs, and it's all of a sudden now it's the agricultural enforcers are out there speaking aggressively. But let me tell you, folks, when I arrived here, you could just quietly go, phew, and you could knock over the whole system because it was corrupt. They were afraid of themselves. They were guided by corrupt leaders and who were obligated to give the farmer, give the agricultural people what they wanted. So this thing about the rats, you're concerned not only for the cruelty, but how are they going to apply these traps, and what are they going? Do you know this? What is going to happen?
Well, they're going to be attached mostly to trees,
mm-hmm.
and they have a bait that is essentially a peanut butter base. And the rat will reach into this device and a captive bolt will come out and smash his head.
Mm-hmm.
And then these traps are self writing so that you don't have to reset the trap. It resets itself, so there will be several dead rats.
So it will once it's activated, one rat comes in and snaps it, triggers it, then it resets itself to wait for another rat?
Yes. So, but I would think that, rats are pretty intelligent, and if I were a rat and went up to the bottom of a tree and saw a whole bunch of dead rats flying on the ground, I would really get the hell out of there rather than
sticking
my head in.
I don't want to place humor inappropriately, but you think we can get some of those traps for the legislators down there that go astray?
So I'm sorry, their heads are way too big to fit into any traps.
No, when they're putting their hands in somebody else's pocket is what I mean.
Oh.
Maybe there's a solution to corruption in this town. every developer, every person that wanted to do business with the state, lease land or whatever, must carry a trap in their pocket. No, I'm being facetious, but you get my drift. But it is about the cruelty you are concerned with in the application, and also the state agency. I saw that and I thought, why in the hell is the state agency presenting itself in such a fashion? I mean, it's almost comical. It's unprofessional, in my opinion. When you sent me a copy of this, I'm thinking, is this the way a state agency? Where about the sensitivity? It may find itself offending many people, and apparently that is just where they are now. And they will try to dismiss it, I'm sure, as usually. But anyway.
So I'm hoping. I am writing to the governor and wishing him a happy new year and a good start to session and saying, do you really want to have DLNR portrayed in this? I guess it's silly, it's smarmy, it's it's just inappropriate and unprofessional.
Insensitive. Hey, let's, if you would, I'm going to go for a break and then we'll come back. If you would call in about 10:05, 10:10, if you could you?
Okay,
alrighty.
Sure.
Thank
okay.
you. All righty, guys. We'll be right back. And thanks. That was Kathy Gogel with Animal Rights Hawaii, and this is the Carol Cox Show. Again, you can catch it live now and streaming carolcox.com.
Tune for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu.
Put herself in a bind. She keeps praying on the day that I'm man would come home from prison to stay.
The life she's living, the love she's giving, the pain is killing, the stress she's feeling from the evils of the world.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, good morning and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. I'd like to invite you to call in 524-1080 and I will have a continued conversation with Miss Kathy Gogel of the Animal Rights Hawaii here in Honolulu, and we're talking about dairies and cruelty and to animals and what have you. And I wanted to this milk act that they lifted or they softened up. One of the callers in earlier times called and said about welfare and what have you. This is yet another example of corporate welfare. If it's a fair market price and it's demand and all of those things that have come into play, the elements of economics. Why is our government serving to protect individuals? So I think that a lot of Hawaii's woes are actually from these falsely structured, poorly structured protection mechanisms, that, and there are many others built in. And then that translates into mindset of that. I was looking at the number of people. We say we don't have racism here in Hawaii, but we do have exclusion practices of exclusion. And that is, you take the city and county of Honolulu, the representation of African Americans and some of the other minorities are slim and none. How could that happen for such a long time in the refuge division and throughout many other organizations or agencies within city government, as well as state government? While they're, quote, not racist, they are excluding and have such barriers, and these barriers serve like the milk is to protect the farmers who has a special interest in raising dairy farm products or providing milk. And production. So Hawaii needs to revisit its entire makeup and the structure the way it is. And unless we do that, I think in no time it will be explained. We inflicted these injuries on ourselves because we weren't ready for the real world out there. The real world is moving along and trying to strip itself of protections because and they're in Idaho and other places, farmers and what have you get protection. So it's not unique to Hawaii, but anyway, there's a number of things that come into mind. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, I think that's pretty appropriate playing Gangsters in Paradise.
All right.
I like Coolio's version the best, and Weird Al Yankovic does a nice one called Amish in Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding that I live here in a gangster's paradise called Honolulu and Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to an academic paradise. I'll be out of here in the middle of the month. And if you want to talk about rights, you might want to try to define them. how are we going to get our rights from a gangster's paradise? You have the right to pay a bribe. You have a right to pay a back market fee. This pussy going to cost you how much?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I just...
My son is going to be going off to school. You know, you think you can help me with the bus fare? Well, wait, we don't have buses here in Hawaii. Well, you know what I mean. You know, it's that kind of...
You don't have buses in Hawaii. You've got sardine boxes. This is a freaking two fills up before it's halfway through Waikiki.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's going to do to change things, but let's talk about rights, how far the animal rights go before we cross over into them, what human rights are, and how this punk-ass gangster town's got to change.
Yeah, well, as far as human and animal rights, it's 99.9% of the times it's animals inflicting an injury or some offensive act on animals. Animals don't... I don't recall reading much about animals killing for fun or killing for... to strip the other fellow off of his, take the wool or the feathers off of one guy so he could wear it and look good for the chicks.
Somehow we've got mechanization going on where we're killing millions of chickens every certain amount of time so mm-hmm. we can have super-sized chicken McNuggets.
Right, yeah, and that is, again, at the end of the day, it's really human cruelty because we're inflicting, when you look at how they're processing the food, and we end up with medical issues, medical problems. And each one of these practices generate waste, require space, and they occupy that in massive farming efforts. So, yeah, you're right.
I guess we just got to keep on learning. I've come up with this saying in the last week. What does a hermaphrodite, a neuter, a homosexual, a physical disabled, a mental disabled, and a robot all have in common?
Well, I wouldn't want to venture that. It sounds offensive already, but, you know.
They're gifted. They allow us to perceive reality in a different way and be a better service in mm-hmm. an area where we need to learn. Mm-hmm. So we can be a better service to animals, humans, environment, good for us. But mm-hmm. obviously, we make the cheaper the better, more for less choice, and a lot of things are left undone and then done improperly.
Mm-hmm.
The money's taken off the top and the maintenance isn't put in at the bottom in
yeah.
real estate here. Just on and on and on and on. I'm going to where it's going to be real life.
So where's real life going to be?
It's going to be on the West Coast. Ninth Circuit Court.
With the other fruitcakes?
Absolutely.
California, Oregon, Washington, all beautiful places, and people are really awesome. So
decriminalization in Washington and Oregon now. California still got a little bit
I know why you're moving now. Okay, you're looking at the smoke signals. You're reading the smoke signals. I got you.
No, I'm going to prepare myself to help corporations arm against being unwelcome in outer space.
Oh, okay.
I'm an aviator.
All righty. Well, thanks. Before you leave, give us a call, but you can always call. It's
all right. I can get it off the internet and on the mainland.
All righty.
But rights is a good place to pick up the conversation.
All righty. Well, thank you. Aloha.
Bye.
Hi, Kathy. Welcome back.
Hi, Carol.
Yeah. Kathy Gogel from Animal Rights Hawaii. Again, carolcox.com. You can pick it up. We're experiencing technical problems right now with the KWAI, and as soon as we come back online, we'll let you know. But anyway, 524-1080, if you have some questions or comments, or share some thoughts with Kathy or myself. Well, go ahead, and we were talking about the state DLNR before I got silly.
Uh-huh.
I share your concerns that a government agency would behave in this fashion. They are not, you know, well, let's go back for a couple of years, maybe 100 years, and understand that these agencies, the DLNR and conservation agencies, were started out, got their findings or their start up in the protection of game management. It included quite a bit of game management. They didn't start off in protecting animals just because it was cruel and unusual. It was simply in the process of managing so that they can return the next season and kill more. They're just simply put. And making sure you don't kill them all in one season. So game management, that's what they originally were. Now they're DLNR, Cal Fishing Game Conservation Agencies. You understand?
Yeah, I do.
But go ahead and chime in there if you...
Well, I have concerns, a lot of concerns about the lack of transparency within DLNR and also its real sense and I dare I use the word cowboy kind of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of think that they are a law unto themselves, but not just DLNR. There are problems with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, with USDA Wildlife Services, with the public-private partnerships,
mm-hmm.
that seem to be so incestuous, and it makes it really difficult for someone like me to get information about what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I've been really concerned about are the massacre, the planned massacre of hybrid ducks.
Mm-hmm.
These are mallards who cross with Hawaiian ducks, and you can't tell them apart. They look the same. The only way you can tell which is a Koloa ma'uli is through a blood test.
Mm-hmm.
And people with the Fish and Wildlife Service are planning to go and kill as many of the hybrids as they can,
mm-hmm.
which smacks to me of I guess species racism.
Yeah, you're on the right foot. I'll tell you what I look at is that the mallard duck. I mean, and it is to protect the Koloa ma'uli. Protecting it is important. But the measures are, up until the day they decide to pull the trigger, they've been sitting on their thumbs and not challenging the hotels who imported birds, breeders who were breeding ducks and collecting ducks and you know, having their own water parks, water gardens. Where did some of these? And the other problem is, I have a concern in that from an evolutionary standpoint, are we serving as God in the sense that are we going to impact or interfere with evolution? Because we say, for example, the Canadian goose is the predecessor may have migrated here, and then that's where the nene or something to that effect, right? So are we, by going out in mallards, now I'm giving an example. Over in Ever Beach, I'm photographing, there is a small pond. And this pond has northern shovelers, which is not native to Hawaii, but they occur here. There are pintails, there's about 15 or 16 pintails, so it's not one vagrant, one individual bird. So is that the beginning of an evolutionary process by having those birds here, and then you see other birds there? So the state and the federal agencies tend to pull, they're trigger happy and not really going out and challenging the pet shops or whoever's selling ducks or making requirements that, I don't know, what do you do to keep ducks from flying that would be humane? You know, the barnyard duck, the mallards and what have you, or the white duck that people farm and cook and eat, and they escape into the wild. What can we do to stop that? The state really has no plans, so the answer is Let's shoot them. The laser.
They are shooting them there. They left, I believe it was last year, over at Hamakua Marsh. Dofaw shot a number of ducks, and these were fairly tame ducks who came up, used to come up onto the riverbank there and get fed by people.
And so, yeah, cruelty is something. I mean, I, as a game warden, I used to have to check trap lines. It was a legal right to do it. I would never, ever interfere with anybody's rights. And as a trapper, and you'd come along, and there'd be coyotes or fox or whatever you trapped, and then the non-targeted species, you'd have birds of prey. And so there's no perfect world, but again, when you raise it to the game management authorities, they have a different perspective. You know, these are varmints, but they are part of the ecosystem. That you're managing, when the ecosystem is tilted, then you have a problem. You have a species that pops up, right? So here in the state of Hawaii, rats are not. They really don't have a natural enemy other than the owl, or the poeo. But the barn owl was introduced, right?
Yes. Yeah. So. Well, it's not just a problem here in Hawaii. I was just reading yesterday about on the grounds of Vassar College. There's a herd of white-tailed deer. They've decided that they really don't have enough deer to allow hunting at this point because the population has decreased. Now, whether it's decreased from overhunting or from self-regulation of their reproduction, we don't know, because it seems like most of the Land and Natural Resource Agency people are mostly, their first idea is, okay, we shoot them, and then we figure out later on what was the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's such a drastic measure, I've always questioned, because then when you see why they're slacking on the real enforcement of zoning laws and zoning rules and the application of pesticides and the allowance for development and, you know, all of that, right? And then the willingness to allow, just take, for example, the Majiro. And I ask this, I mean, you can speak to this. The Majiro, the white-eyed vireo, the egret, the Sharma thrush, the cardinals, red cardinal of Virginia and cardinalis, and other imported species. Should the state, they allow these things to be imported? Right, and in fact, some of the state agencies intentionally imported them, and now it went bad, and they're bad. They found that they are competing with the native species. Now shoot them all. When will we hold the DLNR and the Fish and Wildlife Service accountable and say, no, come up with some plans and a program that manages all aspects of this threat, not just buying T-shirts and buying fancy traps and killing rats, because you still, tomorrow you might import another bird to kill something else because that's your way of doing things. So what would you say to that?
Well, yes, these birds were all brought in by people, and I don't believe that any of them create a really serious problem for either agriculture or with other native species.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking about the Majiro, a tiny, beautiful bird. His voice is like little bells, and to have somebody call that a dangerous invasive species is just, it's beyond ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I think what when they say it's not that this bird attacks or it has, they are so numerous in the ability to repopulate and to the production rate is greater than the threat. So they're just that the concern. They have some valid concern, but it's just that all they do is okay, put some poison and do this and do that. It's a rat, and saying no. It's your policies, it's your practices that have painted us in a corner. And the last stand of woods or coral trees or the rainforest that's left because you let everybody farm it and develop it and screw it up. Now you're only relying on pulling the trigger. You know, it's a reality that these species, if one bird has to eat, these species compete. It's so the overcrowding, like human beings. Most of the Hawaiians and other folks that were here earlier are having to move out because the bigger predators move in with bigger bucks, and that's the way it is. But I just get tired of seeing them resorting to, and I was on the airplane 2 weeks ago, and I'm thinking, you know, the birds manage the runway away, grow the grasses that you, or do something that would uninvite the birds to congregate on the runways and what have you. You wouldn't have to go out and shoot as many of them. And speaking of that, how many birds do you usually keep up with it? How many birds do they shoot?
Well, I have not looked at the Wildlife Service's records for the probably won't have the records for 2014 for a while, but
in the past, give the listeners some idea of what number of birds or that they report, and what is it a monthly report that they make and then an annual.
I've seen the annual report. It's thousands, mm-hmm. thousands of specific species mm-hmm. are killed. Anything around an airport. And some are used, they call them an incidental take,
mm-hmm.
which we have to rely on their honesty to say it's an incidental take. I don't always. I don't have the figures in front of me,
mm-hmm.
but it is thousands. And Wildlife Services, they're contract killers. So mm-hmm. the more they kill, the more they get paid. So they like to kill. They say they don't, but these guys, they like to kill.
Right.
A suggestion for, you know, we have our forests have been cut down and cut down and cut down for cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Why not let the forest grow back? It would be more habitat for native species. We would not have to deal with the manure, with all the other aspects of an industry that is damaging to the environment and also needs a great deal of support from the taxpayers. This is... let the forest grow back. They say, mm-hmm. oh, nothing can grow here. That's why we have cattle on the ground. Well, trees would grow.
Yeah. And sustainable living, for example, people pick ferns, pick other plants for consumption and berries. But if you're grazing cattle and bringing in gorse and what have you, it overwhelms the area. And there crowds out the native species or plants that people would forage. And so bringing in a cow and put it on the ranch and leasing lands from the DHHL or the DLNR or other state agencies or federal agencies to raise cattle, and they say it's for the people because from people eating meat, but then what if many of you can't afford meat? So a portion of the population don't benefit from that practice.
And most of these cattle, when they're yearlings, they're sent up to the mainland as far away as Texas to grow to slaughter weight.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not feeding Hawaiian people at all. They're keeping a certain number of people in the state well put into their rural lifestyle at the taxpayer's
mm-hmm.
expense.
Mm-hmm. And that, what people don't understand, the cruelty, there's many benefits to your efforts because it fleshes out of many a thing, number of things. It exposes just a simple fact, the way they treat you in getting some of your documents or that you request. The information is public. It should be available. But when you, like myself, go down and ask for it, they give you a circle to run around in, and they give you the circle jerk, right?
Yes, indeed. Carol, I had, last month I received a bill from the Department of Agriculture for 15 cents for, I think it was 3 copies that they mm-hmm. had been sent to me. So if you add up the time of the clerk who looked for the material, who redacted whatever they didn't want me to see, to make another copy of that, the postage back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
When I wrote my check, and I just wrote, seriously?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how mundane or insulting, I mean, and they do. I mean, I had a situation recently with the design construction city. They tell me, I think I spent better of $60 in gas and parking and 3 days going to get a document. And they said, it's going to cost you $1.50 for 3 pages. And, well, no, it shouldn't cost me anything. Well, it's $1.50. And argue with me. Talk to the director who resigned or quit and went back to whatever. And I look in the mail the other day, and I still have them. I will never throw them away. 2 quarters mailed back to me. So it cost them more money. They were going to charge me $1.50 for 3 pages. And then in turn, they were wrong, as I told them. And so what did they do? Put 2 quarters in an envelope and mailed it back to me. How much did that cost the state? Just in postage to get that back to me, and you understand.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is 2015. Why is not the state keeping most of these documents in an electronic form so that it can be emailed?
Mm-hmm.
My feeling is, number one, just it's stasis. If they take home their paychecks every week and they don't make any waves, things will continue going on. The other thing is that perhaps they want to make it difficult for people like you and me to access this information and don't want to go out of their way to make it easy. So the combination of those two possibilities is pretty daunting.
Mm-hmm. Hey, recently you filed a request with the medical center here, and we know as KGMB with Rick Desaug has been covering a number of exposés on their shortcomings or their inability to act professionally, I would say, and adhering to the protection rules of the contaminants in the study samples that they not be careless with them. Now, you filed a request. What was that request for?
I filed a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, with the CDC
mm-hmm.
last May, because I'd heard on the news that the School of Medicine had 30 violations, and I wanted to find out what they were.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent my letter off, and as you know, it takes quite a while often to hear back. A few weeks ago, I heard on the news that that the documents had become available about the violations.
And these are the ones that you requested formally on the FOIA?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe that they are. So Senator Slom's office had contacted him several months ago about this because he was involved in the original request. And so he emailed me the documents that I had wanted. And the next day, I got a letter from CDC denying my request for the documents.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think that the government, half the government doesn't know what the other half of the government is doing. I think it's just so big that nobody's paying attention.
Yeah, but if we ascribe to that, then we owe it to ourselves to stop bitching and moaning about it. I mean, if we can explain it that way. I think there's something more sinister in that people, individuals, are stripped of their rights by these agencies and the so-called FOIA officer, and these are tricks that they use, because why would they send you a letter saying you're not going to get anything, and yet the same information they're giving it to a state senator or giving it to someone who gave it to the state senator. See, you know, that's unethical, and I see it often. One thing I've learned to share with you is that when you ask for a document, the first thing you're told, it has to be in writing. It has to be formal, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't take any verbal phone calls, requests, or anything, and we don't deal with FOIA. But as soon as you send your FOIA in, you get this sneaky, sleazy approach. They call you, then ask you, I just want to clarify. Well, can't you read English? I did clarify. I said specifics. Well, no, we just need a little more clarification to process your request faster. But now if we just put you in the pile with everyone else, and it may take you 6 months before we even look at it, right? And then you say, well, whatever you got to do, you do it, but just adhere to the rules. And 9 months go by and you still haven't gotten a document. But remember, they tell you the earliest, if you don't cooperate with them and succumb to the nonsense that they're preaching, you're going to have a delay. But then when you don't do anything, they take longer. Or you do what they want to do. Isn't that funny? It's a game that they are playing there, and to deny you the right for documents. And I think it's an abridgment of the civil rights or the rights of the people, the transparency.
Well, there is a certain group within Congress who would like to see the end of freedom of information, and I'm quite worried about what's going to happen once Congress reconvenes. I think there are a lot of programs on the hit list.
Well, keep in mind, you know, if you've learned as I have, I don't really sweat it, because the reality is that Congress doesn't have openness to its actions anyway. The House of Representatives, you can be admonished to be called for stealing and doing anything. You as a citizen, right up to inquire about your representative behavior, you can't get those records. They're exempt. So imagine, you can see what motivates them. If it works for them to keep everything away from you about themselves and their function, then imagine how they could invoke that and protect their friends, the monies that they're shoveling to their friends, the taxpayers' dollars, and the, you know. So that's what bothers me.
Yeah.
But anyway, you weren't just picking at them. You were looking for specifics with the CDC, correct? With the medical building and the research.
Yes. Well, whoever runs the medical school, which it's part of UH, but for the past several years, they have really wanted to have a level 3 biosecurity lab.
Mm-hmm.
they were going to put it out in IAEA, then it was going to go out on the YNI coast. Now they want to put it at the medical school, which I think they have a level one at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking serious,
mm-hmm.
very serious, SARS kind of serious toxins.
Do research on those.
Yes. In a tsunami evacuation zone, which does not seem to me to be a very good idea. So when I heard about that there were problems with security, I wanted more information. And that was the idea of get this FOIA. But what I've gotten is a very interesting letter where CDC is asking the university to show cause why they don't clean up their act. And since I got this through other means than I had requested them, I don't know how I'm going to get any more document unless someone provides them to me, because I've already got a denial letter from CDC.
Hold on one second. Let's see. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Hi, Carol.
Hey,
I was at one of the Department of Land and Natural Resources a few months back, and I was shocked. I was stunned. Mr. Ila, what's his
name? Ila.
Yeah, Ila, yeah. He says, we're going to go on an executive session now. And I said, excuse me? Wait a minute. The public, us, are going to be left out of that? We're going to be just sitting here? And he says, and I said, how's that a public process? And he says, well, that's just part of our process. We have to do that. And I said, well, wait a minute. The public is out. He says, well, that's private. I said, this is a public institution. Everything is transparent. And I couldn't believe it. No wonder people don't trust, especially the Department of Land and Natural Resources. And let me just make one other point. I brought up to them that, you know, they go through the, like, there by the poly there in the woods, the jungle there.
So,
periodically, and they bring a crew in there and they totally wipe out people's little encampments that they have, homeless folks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no process or anything. They just take everything there and they dispose of it or they steal it or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe you come back and you find nothing. You're bare, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the way they get away with things. But they're making deals in their executive sessions in a public hearing. That's why I can't understand. It's supposed to be a public hearing, and they'll be in the room in the back, and then they're making some deals. And
if you dare to say I've met the enemy, and the enemy is my government.
Yeah.
If you dare say that, all of a sudden you're supposedly on a target as a person or a radical or a terrorist or what have you. And you don't even get to think that far. This is as simple as calling a state agency or city agency and being treated as if anybody should be arrested and investigated, it should be the employees of those agencies. Because they're eating at the fabric of American rights. The whole thing that we're built for. Good government,
well,
right?
Yeah, I remember I was challenging Mr. What's his name, Ali?
Ila.
Ila, yeah. And he kind of looked at me. I dare you. I mean, it's like a look like, what are you doing? I dare you question my authority, you know?
Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe it. But you know what? I've been going to many number of hearings now at the city and the state, and I find that it's commonplace. These people, the last thing they want to do is they hate us people that want to have a to be in their hearing. They hate publicity. They hate transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't. And they really, you know, they give you the stink eye. You know, I noticed that a lot of times. And even, you know, I've been at hearings where was the homeless situation. It was like 97% were against the sit and lie laws on the sidewalk, and the council just rolled the other way.
Mm.
You know, I mean, totally. They didn't listen. Or, you know, sometimes I see them and I think it's almost like they're. Well, like you said, they already had things planned. I mean, they know what they've been doing, but they have to go through this, this drudgery. I mean, they have a public hearing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
What do we do about it? I mean, that's, you know, over and over and over and over. We talk about the circumstances, but what do we do? Some say, well, it's 2015 now, and we're still having the same things, and it's. I don't know. I mean, you go back and you look at, you have the police chief who is quite naturally, anybody else behaving in such a fashion would have been gone. Down, they would have just said, look, enough already. We have policemen on your force that are doing things that are unacceptable, that are illegal. You don't have control over that. Then you have your family issues, and then you have these, and then you prosecuting cases, and then you take, if you want to add in, the house gets bombed, you get assaulted, and no investigation, speaking of me.
Yeah.
So you know, when you talk about corruption and the Attorney General dismisses and all up to the moment you get attacked, they want you to talk to them. And
well,
as soon as you get assaulted, you understand. And the reason is that the Attorney General that was there before Ige won. You take him, for example. On this show, I don't believe that he would have ever, his agents would have ever conducted an investigation into the assault on me, because on this show, we expose him for sitting there making illegal deals. Remember the Michelle Calhoun, where he proposed to take money from DHHL and pay her a salary so she would work with Colin Kippen on the homeless, and many other instances where exposing, and DHHL and the failure to do anything. And so you're not going to, that's the corruption. When a person in a system, the head man, can decide, well, screw him. He's out there doing these things. That's one way of screwing him. We don't have to protect him. And so that's the corruptness of it. That's where.
By the way, you're in the way.
Well,
buddy, you're in our way. I mean, we had all this planned out, and you're putting a wrench in our.
But you see, I'm just a minute portion of the population that experiences all of this on a daily basis. So
here is what I think: a slight hope is this new governor. And we will see what happens. We will see if he comes out with the right people in his cabinet and all that. And if he's really says what he says, he's gonna really go over the process.
Mm-hmm.
He has a big challenge ahead of him, because he's gonna have to work with all these corrupt people, or hopefully he's gonna get rid of a lot of these.
Yeah. Well, anyway, but Kathy, you got anything you wanna say there? We got off on a different subject here, but anything?
Oh, no. I'm just listening and enjoying this.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to thank you so much for inviting me on your show.
Anytime.
And giving me the opportunity to talk. And
but what would you like the people to do? Is there anything you would like to ask them real quickly? And give your website and how do they contact you?
Okay. Our website was hacked, but you can reach us through our Facebook page, Animal Rights Hawaii. And please do plan to come to see Cowspiracy. It's a wonderful film. It's not gory. It explains the environmental problems with livestock agriculture. It's going to be at 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. on the 22nd of January, Thursday, the Capitol Auditorium in the basement, and we will have vegan poo-poo.
Okay. Hold on 1 second. Caller, good morning. You have a comment, a question real quick?
Yeah, I think the thing that can help you get through the smell test is whatever you do, as long as it contributes back to Hawaiian culture, because all they really want to do is eat their food and try to live their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you hold should hold people accountable for. I think I lost the thought, but I think I'll leave it at that.
All right.
That's what to do. Bake the Hawaiian culture as best as you can. That's what you feature out here. They want to eat and live a certain way. That's what this whole thing should be. That's what your tax dollars ought to do. This is not supposed to be a retail experience. But, of course, I'm totally wrong.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Well, Dave, real quick, we're closing down the last minute. You have a comment? You want to...
Well, just thank you again. And, hey, listen, you're part of the process. I'm part of the general public is still part of that process. And you know what? Every once in a while, I mean, I know you get a tiny bit of publicity and on the main TV and radio sometimes, not very much, but it's every little, yeah, I mean, you know, we don't have no newspaper. We have maybe tiny websites and that kind of stuff. You know, I guess we just hope for the best and just keep on fighting the good fight.
Yeah, okay.
Darn it. And I can't quit doing it. It's a matter of lives, you know.
Right, and that's what happens, and that's what shaping the future is. If we lay down on our butts and do nothing and say that's the way it is, then that will be the way it is. So
I always like to say about we said this before, that Martin Luther King, the hottest place in hell is reserved for those that don't speak out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And amen to that. I think, you know, and darn it, I really think so. And that's exactly why things are the way they are, because there really isn't a lot of people speaking out. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people who are just afraid to speak out, because they're afraid to lose their damn livelihood and end up on the streets.
Yeah, it's
real.
Well, that's the message they've sent to you. If you speak out, you'll lose your job or you'll lose the privileges and welcome to America. And we say aloha and all of that, and then you really look back. It's a bag of words and no actions, and we don't care about the native people. Never have, never will. Captain Cook didn't come here, and I heard someone say he got was successful because they were waiting for their belief is that there would be a white-skinned man come back. You know, I thought, wow, how insulting. No, it was their belief, but it wasn't on a ship. And
it's the whole mentality. No,
but that's the message they're sending and conveying. So anyway,
yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm running down out of time, and we'll talk to you next week. Alrighty. And Kathy, thank you, and I will get you those documents. I've tried to send you a couple of them regarding the dairy and anything in closing?
Yes. Yep. Happy New Year to everybody, and keep fighting for what you believe in.
Okay. Well, thank you, and we'll be back next week, and please feel free to call anytime and we'll talk, but the dairy, we'll keep watching that. And what about your concerns real quick about the treatment of when the cows come in, they don't use all the males, or they don't use any of the males in production of milk, to my knowledge now.
They're going to bring in pregnant heifers
mm-hmm.
who will give birth to, we don't know how many males, how many females. The females will go into little sheds where mm-hmm. they are kept separate from each other for mm-hmm. a year.
Mm-hmm.
The males are usually either killed immediately or sold off to someone who wants to have cheap beef.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the dairy cows, after their several pregnancies, because they have to be kept pregnant in order to produce milk, are in very poor health, and they will be slaughtered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's the dairy business it's not all ice cream and yogurt and fun. It's
right.
a horrible industry. The cows are raped. They're artificially inseminated. Their babies are taken away from them when they're less than a day old. It's appalling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of these just constantly with the environmental concerns. I don't know if my biggest concern is, will they be held accountable to the strictest sense, and if they are successful in getting that is my real concern. And this thing about the price of milk, I think I'm hoping in the coming weeks we find some evidence that there's more to it than just it wasn't coincidental, the timing of holding these hearings and the exemptions and what have you, and waiving the Milk Act, and something, there's something worse than that's going on. So anyway, we'll talk to you folks next week, and thank you, Kathy Gogel.
Aloha.
Aloha. All right, guys, we'll see you next week, and I appreciate it, and keep your eyes open on this. We're going to go to Maui and talk about that $1,000 a day rent that we are paying to a private individual. So we'll talk to you, and as I've established a policy, if you call within the last seconds, you'll just have to hold on and call me next week. Take care. Aloha.
Every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.